Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Diary of a Porfessional. It is Lou here.
Ashley.
Yes, yes. We are here with a future registered dietitian, Asha the Scientist. We'll get into her in a little bit. But of course, we're going to start with our gratitude. You got anything in mind, Asha?
Yeah, you know, I feel I'm just grateful for age. Age is a blessing. And I had to see both my parents are in their 70s, which is like, you know, it's tugging at my heart a little. I'm like, oh, how y'all reach this
right,
point?
Right.
But it's great to see my parents thriving, walkie talkie, you know, thank God, you know, just well, you know.
Yeah.
In their 70s, I had them in my car. And I was like, all right, is my elderly parents all tucked in and ready to go? They both stared at me. I was like, all right, this joke didn't go over too smooth. Okay, I get it. I get it. But you know.
Listen, after a certain age, you realize that you are really the parent. They just hold the title. Okay. Yeah. Because you got to talk to them like they're children. You got to redirect them.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
All the things. But it's a blessing. So you're right.
Yeah.
I feel you. I mean, I am grateful for a growing community. You know, I have friends, and as we get older, you know, their family are growing and everything like that. You know, people's lives happen. But the fact that when, like, big things happen and I mean, I think anyway, I'm one of the first to know I'm in the know. It's like, you thought of me, like I'm still, you know, I'm still gang. And I appreciate that.
Of course.
You know, so we just like to celebrate all the wins. And, you know, I mean, I guess like we just got to keep passing that down the generations. Like now we're the adults. I don't know who the hell allowed that, but we are. So, yeah, I'm grateful for that.
Like the most unserious adults.
And I'm okay with it. And I don't see it changing anytime soon, but whatever.
No. Yes. So, Asha, tell us, what are you grateful for this week?
Yes. So I'm grateful for, first of all, to be here. Thank you both for inviting me to speak on this podcast. Gratitude for just the space to like share what I've learned and what I know with others, because it's not for me to just hold. It's, you know, education is to be shared. And I'm also grateful just for the space I am in life. It's a space of kind of reflection and slowing down and studying and doing some introspective reflection. But it's a good space as I prepare and build for the future.
We love that. Okay, first of all, let me just tell you personally, like in my mind, like I would like be having my own garden and growing things and like, you know, living off the land. It's not impossible, but as someone who lives in New York, it feels that way sometimes. So when we saw you, we were like, oh my gosh, this woman is amazing. Like we need to talk to her. We need to know. We need to just get morsels. So we are grateful to have Asha the Scientist, who is, you know, working towards being a registered dietitian, but she's more than that, and she is going to get into it, and we are going to talk to her. So please, please introduce yourself, and, you know, we'll get to there.
Absolutely. So I am born and raised here in Detroit, Michigan, and I have been poured into by my parents. My dad, he always had us out in the garden. We were planting flowers every year. We were pulling up weeds. We were in the kitchen with him, creating different recipes. One that I remember I didn't like was a tuna melt, and he put cheese on top of tuna. And I was why? But now, like, that's like a common food that many people eat. So just to like growing up, understanding to not yuck someone else's yum and to appreciate what I have in front of me was really key. Especially as I thought about transitioning into studying food as well and not putting down someone else's cultural foods because that's not my palate or my forte as well. So that's a bit about me. We're definitely going to get more into the weeds on who I am and what I do as well.
Yes, I like that. So what made you want to pursue an education in nutrition and become, you know, wanted to go in the route of being a dietitian?
Absolutely. So my mom, one day I was sitting down in high school, and we were in our living room, and I was looking up careers. I had done a career test, and one of the careers that came up was a cardiologist. And knew I wanted to help people, knew I wanted to maybe go into medicine, but I was really looking at the salary more so, and not the passion that would fuel my salary and, you know, the work that I did every day. And she told me, pursue something that doesn't feel like work, where you'll go in every day and you won't work a day in your life because you're enjoying the aspects of the work that you do. So I decided to pivot, and I wanted to think about, okay, what is something I love? And I said, food. I love food. I want to help people learn how to eat healthy. And I want to pursue a career in that. And I started looking up various programs. I knew I wanted to go to an HBCU, a historically Black college or university.
Okay.
Right? HBCU love. We love that. And I wanted to go out of state. I wanted to leave Michigan. So I found a program, North Carolina Agricultural and Technical State University, applied and ended up going down there and being poured into and seeing people that look like me teaching me and getting involved on the farm and getting involved in the community and volunteering and partnering with community members in my efforts to just advocate and to learn as much as I could in that food nutrition space. So that's why I decided to pursue that education, because I wanted to see people that look like me in that food and nutrition space.
Ooh, that, I feel like that is so key and so beautiful, because it's like, that's that little thing, like, as Black people and people of color, we know when it's like, okay, this is for us, it's catered to us with us in mind. In that vein, how does the lack of Black people and people of color in your field influence, like, treatment modalities for us?
Absolutely. So when we think about treatment modalities in nutrition, especially for Black and brown patients, we have to understand that the number or percentage of dietitians in the field is actually less than 4% for Black registered dietitians and nutritionists. So that is going to impact the care, right? Because patients, Black and brown patients, are not seeing people that look like them. So there may be a removal of cultural foods, or there may be a push for more Eurocentric or Western diet. There may be a push for bland foods or not using spices because they may have salt in them. And there's education around salt-free and the spices that we use, like cayenne pepper or chili pepper or smoked paprika. And also there may be an emphasis on weight loss too, because you need to lose the weight to get to this metric or to feel better. And there is benefits to weight loss, but that should not be the whole picture when we're thinking about treating our people specifically. We know that there can be differences in bone density for Black people, especially Black women. So that can impact our weight, and it's all interconnected. So understanding that it's not just on the patient, but it's a system that works together. It's various systems that are working together, right? It's the food system, it's the agriculture system, it's the political system, it's the justice, it's so many things working together. So ultimately, this can all lead to like a lack of culturally sensitive and culturally responsive care. So when you're thinking about culturally responsive, you're tailoring your education and intervention to your patient. You're not just generalizing your nutrition advice. So that's what I think about as a future dietitian, really getting down to the nitty gritty of my patient, their traditions, their practices, their everyday life, because my reality is not theirs just because we both might share the same cultural history.
Mm. Girl, Ashley, I can't even right now.
No, and that's why we need people like you, right? We need people like you. And just less than 4%. It's just like there is such a need. Less than 4%. So let's talk about like foods in, you know, let's talk about foods. Like, what is Black Indigenous food? And what's its significance?
Absolutely. So the significance of Black foods and foods that are indigenous to our culture is that it comes from so many different places. It might be rooted in the continent of Africa, but in Africa, there's many different countries with many different practices and traditions and how they prepare various foods. So then when we had the transatlantic slave trade and we were forcefully taken from the continent, then we saw influences in the Caribbean and South America and even the Southern United States. So just to see all of that interconnect is really key, and to see how plantain can be used in so many different ways to make, you know, I've had it made in like a pancake form versus having it made in like grits before. So it's so many different ways to make it, right? And when we think
you
about
preaching, just so you know,
yeah, I love it. So yeah, when we think about like Black foods or foods indigenous to African culture, I like to refer to the African heritage diet through old ways, and it has a lot of just different examples that we can refer back to. And when we think about like how we eat, we used to depend in nutrition on the pyramid, but we shifted away from that due to like governmental programs such as MyPlate, which is produced by the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Mm-hmm. But again, this pyramid is specific to us. So it talks about greens, and that's at the bottom of the pyramid. So you want to focus on kale, different varieties of kale as well. It's curly kale, it's dino kale, it's red kale, there's so many different kinds of kale. Then you want to focus on your fruits, your vegetables, and your tubers. So your plantain, your potatoes, your eggplant, your watermelon, all those different things are working together as you're moving up the pyramid. Focusing on spices and herbs, and fish and seafood is in the middle. So you want to eat that not every day, but a little less frequently, but based on your preferences and your budget as well. And then at the top is like desserts as occasional, because I know that I can really, that's my
your weakness.
Yes. Thank you. My weakness.
Yes.
Like sure. Many others.
Right. Yes. And that's okay. Right. I'm acknowledging that and I'm working on it. So.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. What is a common misconception you think is out there about growing your own food?
When I think about that, I think about just a quote that I hear a lot when people think about healthy eating and how they say it's like expensive. And like anything, there's so many different ways to like you to engage in budget friendly growing practices. So there's a concept called upcycling, if you all are familiar with that, but you can use various items that you already have on hand to reuse them to grow your own food. So for example, a milk jug. You could put holes in the bottom. You could put your potting soil in your milk jug, and you could water it, and you could grow crops in there instead of purchasing, you know, brand new containers to grow something in or other things. So just using things you already have so you're not going so far outside of your budget. Using old water jugs to collect rainwater to then water the crops that you're trying to grow or the seedlings that you're trying to grow. Also understanding that you don't have to buy new seedlings or new seeds every year, right? If there is a community where you're living, there might be seed swaps. There might be urban gardens where you can go and you can, as you're volunteering in the urban garden, you're learning, you're growing, you're connecting with others. And then you can maybe take some things home and plant them in your space, wherever that is. So thinking outside of the box and not having such a closed mind when it comes to growing your food, I think is like the first place to start.
I feel like it's so easy to be closed minded about that and not really kind of expand and think outside that box. So thank you for sharing that. So for people, like, you know, we live in some cold weather.
Yes. Me too.
Yes.
Yeah, you probably got it worse than us.
Got it worse than us.
It's snowing right now. Yeah.
I thought we were over that.
Me too, but every year.
We was playing A. Marie outside. It's summertime in New York. Like.
Right. We thought, but hopefully it'll leave.
Okay.
I got so worked up, I started coughing. I wanted to know, like, in cold climates, how can people, like, successfully grow their farm?
Yeah.
How can they do that?
Right. So there are, like, tools for season extension. When we think about, like, growing our own food on a larger scale, some organizations might use high tunnels, and that's kind of exactly how it sounds. It's like a open space. It's covered with like plastic, and it helps to insulate the inside area so that it's warm enough for those seedlings to grow. That's something you can kind of create if you have the space in your backyard. Again, you could use like some stakes and use some plastic and insulate that space. But also, there's so much out there for greenhouses that you could purchase or grow your own, or not grow your own, but build your own greenhouse. If you're like handy like that, or want to go in with some friends and work together to do that. Also too, like starting seedlings inside with a grow light and a heat mat. And you could do that in like a space where you kind of make it dark, and then you turn on the grow light, you have your heat lamp, and you check on it every so often to make sure everything is good. There's no mold developing. So those are some easy kind of tips that you can hopefully do in the space that you're allotted here.
All right. So people who don't have a garden, you know, maybe people who live in apartments and things like that, how can they grow fruits and vegetables?
Right. So I would recommend personally container gardening, like I spoke to, using milk jugs to begin your seedlings. That is something that you could have like in a corner if you have sunlight or natural light that comes into your space. That is something that you can do. And then as the season hopefully begins to warm, you can put those things outside to get that natural sunlight and more direct light, because things grow better with the more sunlight that they get. The sun is energy, so it provides energy for the plant to grow in abundance. When it doesn't get as much light, you see it kind of struggling a bit. Similar to us, when we get that sunshine and we're in the summertime and we get that vitamin D being made in our skin, we feel better compared to those colder months. Yeah. Also, like a paper towel method too. It's as simple as using like a bell pepper, and you have the seeds inside, and making that paper towel damp, and then folding it in half and putting some of the seeds inside the paper towel. And you can put all of that into a Ziploc bag and just put it like on a windowsill, and you'll begin to see some of those seeds begin to turn into seedlings, which are baby plants. And eventually you can transfer those into soil, and then you can see how you can literally regenerate the bell pepper that you bought from the supermarket or farmer's market and grow it for yourself. So it's going to be a long journey. It's going to take some days, some significant time, probably more than 30 days, but it's a cool experiment to do with yourself and with your family and community members as well.
I've actually done that with my kids. We did a bean and it worked. So,
right.
And that's also another way of like upcycling, if you will. You buy it the one time, you regenerate it, it's yours.
Exactly.
Propagate.
So, yeah. Giving y'all some little tips. And you can take it from there.
Well, talking about like tips, what are small but yet like effective steps that we can improve our health and not rely on the grocery stores or supermarkets? What are little like tips or steps that we can do?
Absolutely. So the first tip that I like to recommend as a future dietitian is unit pricing when you're in a store, right? So unit pricing is when you're comparing different weights of products and different volumes of products as well. So for example, if you were to have 1 pound of baby carrots that are 99 cents per pound, and 2 pounds of baby carrots that are 94 cents per pound, but the 2 pounds is a total price of $1.89, and the 1 pound baby carrot is a total price of 99 cents. The 1 pound is cheaper, yes, but you're getting less for what you're paying. So it may not last as long depending on how often you eat those carrots. The 2 pounds, you're paying a little bit more, but it's less per pound. So you may have to go to the grocery store less. You may save time because you're not having to go back to get those carrots that you love so much. So that is a way to compare, like, okay, you see different prices and how can you make a decision with all these different prices in the grocery store? That's one big tip that I recommend using. Also, understanding how things are placed in the grocery store. So when you go into the aisles, and understanding that usually products that are least expensive are at the bottom, and it goes up as you go up the shelf. So the top is going to be the most expensive products. So understanding that within your budget is really key, so that you can, you know, purchase the products that you can afford. Essentially, food is extremely expensive right now, unfortunately. So those are some tips that you can use. And also couponing, of course. Here in Michigan, we have Kroger, we have Meijer, and other different retailers that have apps where you can clip coupons, you can put them in your cart, and when you're checking out, you're applying those coupons. So you're getting some money off, essentially, which is always a good thing.
Mm-hmm. It's true. I mean, I know it's still winter where you are, but as it gets warmer, some people don't realize even in urban spaces, there are farmers markets. They come, you know, and you can, that's buying local. It's, you know, keeping certain, you know, I guess the cost and climate change and things like that, because you're buying local and they're not having to ship from some other country. And then you get to know the people in your area and like those small farmers and what they're producing, and hopefully that it's more natural and you can actually know how it's produced.
Absolutely. Yes. You know? And another place too, that you can kind of connect with people is like at a local food cooperative that you maybe are a member or owner of. I know here in the city of Detroit, we have the Detroit People's Food Co-op is opening May 1st, and it's the first Black-owned food cooperative that's going to be opening in the city. So that's really exciting. Looking forward to that. We had another Black-owned grocery store on the east side of Detroit that opened earlier this year called Neighborhood Grocery. So there's a lot of movement in the space of like connecting over food and foods that are familiar to Black and African-American people. So it's an exciting time here in Detroit. And I know that those food cooperatives are also like around the country and developing and opening. So that's something for like your listeners to maybe look into as they're thinking about eating healthy in this new year.
Yeah. So tell us, what are your goals right now as a future dietitian and scientist? What are your current goals right now?
So for me, I really look forward to helping young women, young African-American women specifically between the ages of 18 to 25, to build a solid foundation in healthy eating. And I feel like in order to build that solid foundation, we first have to partner together and define what does health mean to them, because my definition is might be completely different from yours. And also understanding the nuances of their cultural food. So just because they are Black or African-American, are there other cultures that they may belong to that impacts what they eat and what they are familiar with, and what do they want to learn more about when it comes to their history? Because that is connected to what we eat. It influences mm-hmm. who we are, what we eat, where we go, all those things. So I think that healthy eating is, it's more than fruits and vegetables, it's more than whole grains and healthy fats and all that I've learned in my various programs, but it's really more about understanding how food impacts your body for you, because it's different for each and every person. So I don't want to focus on weight loss. I want to focus on building those healthy habits, because then those benefits, they come more naturally rather than when you're focusing on weight loss and that is the only focus. So we're thinking about sustainability over here, as sustainability in your eating and sustainability in the garden as well.
We love that. I like that when you said like that culturally responsible, I was like, I feel like people don't, you know, you can be aware of something, but yes, it is a responsibility, especially, you know, a lot of times Ashley and I, you know, I'm a nurse, and as a practitioner, you kind of have to meet people where they are. Of course, right. You can give them that list of you should be eating this, 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 and not this, this, but it's not realistic. And like you said, sustainability, you have to like take into account what their culture is and what they're used to, educate them, and maybe show them different things. And as they get it and it sticks, you can build more on it to, you know, for more lasting success. I think you're going to be great and amazing.
Thank you so much, Lou.
Yes.
Yes. Where can the people find you?
Absolutely. So the people can find me on Instagram, Asha, A-S-H-A underscore the T-H-E underscore scientist. And my website is www.ashamcelroy.com. I'll send y'all the link, and maybe it could be in the show notes and people can connect with me in those two places.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yes.
So
we want to thank you. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. We have to thank you. Thank you so much. Yes. So on that note, y'all, let us know your thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
Don't forget to like, subscribe. And yeah, so till next time, everyone.
Yes. Bye. Have a great one.
Bye. Thank you.
Yeah.